We're going to now begin Masechta Gittin. The Masechta basically talks about the dinim of a get, hence the name, but Tosfos is going to, for the very first Tosfos, points out that actually the word get sometimes does mean other shtaris as well. Mostly in this Masechta we're going to focus on a get, as when what we know of a get, what's used for a husband and wife to get divorced, but we are going to talk here and there in the Masechta about other dinim of shtaris. So we're also going to talk a lot about the dinim of Eidos and a lot of lumdisha topics that are discussed in this Masechta, actually, and we're going to go through those with time, that's the shem. Now there's a number of dinim, as we're going to go through the Masechta, we're going to see there's a number of dinim that you need in order for a get to be valid. It has to be written l'shem the husband and l'shem the wife. We're going to get to discussing that detail in some detail in the third perek, that's the shem. There's a lot of other dinim about it, among the dinim, which we're going to focus on first, though, is a certain din within the din of shlichus of gittin. Now, you can have, the husband doesn't have to directly give the get to the wife, it's possible for him to send it through a shliach. There are, as we're going to go through the Masechta, there's going to be different kinds of shluchim that we're going to be talking about. For our purposes, right now, what we need to know is there can be what's called a shliach halacha, where the shliach halacha is basically just like a mailman, almost. His job is to bring the get from point A to point B. Once it's brought over there, it still has to be given. Now, he stands in place of the husband, he can give it to the wife, and then it's a kosher to get. It's considered as though it came from the husband to her. There can also be a shliach hayva and a shliach kabbalah. We're going to get to those later on in the Masechta and deal in detail with some of those. But right now, the first Mishnah of our Masechta then is going to deal with a detail within this din of shliach halacha, where you have the husband has appointed a shliach to bring the get from point A to point B, to from where he is to where his wife is, and we're going to learn about a certain din involving that. So there's an interesting sticha where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind it, in Chelek Test, I think. The Rebbe, maybe Chelek Yud Test, whatever. The Rebbe discusses the point that on the face of it, why of all things is the Masechta beginning with this topic? You do have a lot of times a Masechta begins with one of the lesser common topics within the mitzvah, within the halacha that we're talking about. Many times, instead of beginning with the basics, as you have in later Sifrei Halacha, for example, the Rambam, many times the Mishnah will begin with something less common. Nonetheless, though, this is with a detail within the dinim of shlichus, and a very uncommon one too, because we're talking about when the husband is overseas in Medina Seyam. We're going to see soon what Medina Seyam means, but anyway, the husband is in one place and the wife is in another, and you have to send a shliach. So why is the Mishnah beginning with this of all things? So the Rebbe develops the idea there that the pnimius in yonim, a get is, we know that in some places in Tanakh, the relationship between Hashem and us Jewish people is compared to a husband and wife, and during the time of Golos is in a way like a divorce. But there are actually psukim that stress, where Hashem says through the Navi, don't think it's a divorce, where a divorced woman, after all, can go do whatever she wants. No, there's still always a relationship between Hashem and us. All it is it's like, so to speak, the husband has gone overseas. Hashem has gone to Medina Seyam, but he's going to return. So therefore, particularly, our Masechta begins with this case of the husband being in Medina Seyam to stress to us that that's really what the deeper idea of a get is all about. It's not chas v'shalom that Hashem and we are divorced, but rather that we still have a connection. Hashem is just kavyachol in Medina Seyam, but he will return to us. And for that reason, the din that we're going to talk about, b'fanei nichtav b'fanei nechtam, also stresses the point that you have the husband is, so to speak, there at the time when all of this is being accomplished, representing, in other words, that Hashem is always with us no matter where we are. So the Mishnah begins. Hamevi get Medina Seyam. If somebody brings a get from Medina Seyam, now literally Medina Seyam would mean the countries that are over the sea or by the sea. Rashi says that it means every place in Chutz La'aretz, with the exception of Bavel. We're going to talk about Bavel later on, and Daf Vav. But any place else other than Eretz Yisrael, Rashi explains, is called Medina Seyam. Tosfos explains in that case, why not say the word chutzlar? That's why use the word medinasayam. So Tosfos points out that the further on in the Mishnah, we're going to have several different opinions. What exactly is included in medinasayam? Some of those places are sort of there are places that are kind of on the border between Eretz Yisrael and chutzlaretz, and therefore by using the word medinasayam, we're making it clearer that we do or don't mean to exclude those places, depending on the different mandamas that we're going to have in the that we're going to have in the Mishnah. Anyway, there's a lot of further discussion about that among different Rishonim and Achronim. You have, for example, there's the question, and we're going to deal with a little bit over here, and we're going to deal with more on Daf Ches, Bezras Hashem, about the different parts of Eretz Yisrael, what was originally conquered when the Jewish people first came into Eretz Yisrael in the times of Yeshua, versus what was conquered, between then and the times of David, where eventually they conquered the entire Eretz Yisrael, versus you have in the time of the second Beis Mikdash, there were many areas where they did not end up reconquering, they were under the rulership of Persia and then of Greece, but resettling, at least in the times of Ezra, not all of Eretz Yisrael was resettled, and even during the time of the second Beis Mikdash, there were places that even as the second Beis Mikdash went on, you had the Hashmonaim ruling and so forth, you didn't have all of Eretz Yisrael was reconquered. So you sometimes talk about the borders of Oile Mitzrayim versus Oile Bavel, so that may be a reason why Rashi uses the expression kol chutz la'aretz, even though as we're going to see, there may be parts of Eretz Yisrael, there may be areas that are actually considered part of Eretz Yisrael, but nevertheless are in this din. And then there's different others. We're going to see in the Gemara, we're going to talk about cases of smuchos, of cities that are near Eretz Yisrael but not actually part of it. And we're going to talk about muvlois, cities that are where you have like a peninsula of chutzlar that sticks out into Eretz Yisrael and is surrounded on two or three sides by Eretz Yisrael, whether those are going to be considered part of Medinas Hayam. So all of that might factor into this question of why we use the word Medinas Hayam rather than chutzlar. Because in order to say that we are or aren't including such areas, we may be saying, for example, that such areas, since they're surrounded by Eretz Yisrael on three sides, maybe they are considered for this purpose part of Eretz Yisrael, even though in reality they're chutz la'aretz. Then you have, for example, the Ram talks about that Medinas HaYam literally means the countries to the west of Eretz Yisrael. Yam sometimes in Tanakh means the west, because the Mediterranean Sea is west of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, the Mishnah would be using the word Medinas Hayam to say, in other words, that exactly that. On those sides, there's no places that are Muvla, there's no places where you have an area of Chutzlaretz that's surrounded on three sides by Eretz Yisrael. There's no Samuch, there's no places that are near Eretz Yisrael but not in it. So therefore, the Mishnah is using the word Medinas Hayam to exclude such places, and therefore it uses that expression, meaning, in other words, that it's meant to be the same kind of thing on other sides as well. Anyway, so the Mishnah is saying that a shliach brings a get from one of these places, from Medinas Hayam, however we define it, tzorach sheyomer b'fanei nichtav b'fanei nechtam. He has to be able to declare in front of the Beis Din where he's going to be giving the get. He has to be able to declare b'fanei nichtav, it was written in my presence, or b'fanei nechtam, and it was signed in my presence by the Eidim. And we're going to see, the Gemara is going to right away start talking about two reasons for that takana. The Mishnah continues, Rav Gamliel, Ma'afar mevi min arekam min acheger. Rav Gamliel says, not only if a person is bringing a get from Medinas Hayam, meaning like places that are further away from Eretz Yisrael, but even a person brings a get from Rekem or from Cheger. Now, where are Rekem and Cheger? Rashi quotes that you have by Hagar when she's running away from Sarah, or Sarai, as she was called then. When Hagar was running away, she goes, she's on her way from Hebron, which is where they lived at the time, to Mitzrayim, and she's passing through an area between, the pasuk says, Bein Kodesh or Bein Bored, between the cities of Kodesh and Bored, is where she was by the well, where the various Malachim came to her and told her to go back to Sarai, and that she's going to have a baby, and his name is going to be Yishmael, etc., etc. So therefore, that would imply, and now, so the places in the pasuk are called Kodesh and Bored. Targum Unculus translates it Rekem and Cheger. So therefore, if we assume that's the same Rekem and Cheger of our Mishnah, then that's what it would be. These would be places that are like southeast of Eretz Yisrael, southeast or south central of Eretz Yisrael. In the Negev, someplace, you'd have someplace between Hebron, which is the southeast of Eretz Yisrael, and Mitzrayim, which is in the southwest. So it would be someplace in that. It would be someplace in that vicinity. There are different other opinions and different other explanations where Rechem and Cheger would be, including, for example, another possibility is that actually Rechem and Cheger are actually places in the northeast of Eretz Yisrael on the way between there and Bavel. So if so, then the point would be the same kind of thing. In other words, that you have, these are cities that are, so either way, the idea is these are cities that are not, they may be part of Eretz Yisrael as far as the technical definition of la halacha, in the sense, in other words, that you do have, those are in the borders that are described in Parshas Matos, and that maybe Yeshua and the Jewish people, or the Jews in the period after that, until David HaMelech's times, let's say, did conquer them. But nevertheless, they're still not really part of Eretz Yisrael proper. They're sort of on the border, and whichever of the two reasons we're going to have in the Gemara for why you'd need to say b'fanei nechtam, Rav Gamliel is saying that would apply to those two places, to those kinds of places as well, because for the reasons that we're going to see in the Gemara, Rava's reason and Rava's reason of why you should need to be able to make this declaration. The Mishnah continues, Rabbi Eliezer, I'm after the Kfar Ludim to Lud. Rabbi Eliezer says, even if you're just going from Kfar Ludim to Lud, now Lud is solidly in Eretz Yisrael, of course. Kfar Ludim is a village not far from there. It's called Kfar Ludim because you have many people from Lud regularly travel back and forth to that town. Nevertheless, Tosfos explains that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that even though it's called Kfar Ludim, because there are so many people from Lud who are always there, nevertheless he holds that it's not considered like Lud itself, and therefore you're still going to have to say b'fanei nechtam, because you're bringing the get from there. Tosfos also brings a possibility. Rabbi Eliezer himself lived in Lud. He was the Rosh Hashiva over there. So therefore, maybe he's specifically mentioning that. But then Tosfos says not necessarily. His din would apply equally well to other places as well. Anyway, the Chachamim say that no, only a person has to bring, a person has to declare b'fanei nechtam, when he brings a get, only when he's bringing it from Medinas Hayam. We're going to see in the Gemara then exactly how, so in that case, what are the Chachamim saying differently than the Tanakhama? The Tanakhama also said hamevi get in Medinas Hayam. So we're going to see eventually in the Gemara, on Daf Dalad, on the Beis, we'll talk about what exactly the Chachamim are differing, what exactly the Chachamim are saying different than the Tanakhama. There we're going to talk about this matter of Smuchos and Mavlois and all that good stuff. Anyway, so the Chum say, you only need to say only if you're bringing from Medina Sayyam, v'amolech v'amevim v'medina l'medina b'medina Sayyam, and also if a Shliach is bringing a get from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, or the other way around, from Chutz or Hamevi Mimedina L'Medina Mimedina Sayyam, or also, so Hamevi get Mimedina Sayyam would mean he's bringing it in. So in other words, he started out, the husband had the get written in Chutz La'aretz, and now he's bringing it to Eretz Yisrael. So then he has to say b'fanei nechtam. So now we're continuing. Similarly, b'hamoylich, if a person is the other way around, he's bringing the get from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, then also he needs to be able to make this declaration. And again, we're going to see in the Gemara the two reasons of Rava and Rabba. We're going to discuss this point. V'hamevi m'mdina l'mdina b'mdina sayam, and also when he's bringing it from one country to another within Medina sayam. So in all of those, tzarech shayam b'fanei nechtam. With all of those cases, he has to be able to make this declaration in order for the get to be caught. He has to be able to say that it was written and it was signed by the Edom in my presence. Rav Shimon Gamliel Ema Afilu Mehegmunya LaHegmunya. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, even if you bring a get from one hegmunya to the other. Now, a hegmon is a Greek-derived word that means a ruler or a nobleman or something like that. In English, you actually have a word hegemony, which comes from that as well. It means it's a fancy word for rulership. Anyway, Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying, even if not only when you're bringing from one medina to another, but even when you're bringing from one hegmunya to the other. We're going to see in the Gemara later on Daf Dalad, we're going to talk about that it means. Reb Shimon Gamliel was saying, even within the same city, if you have different parts of the city are ruled over by different hegemonim, by different dukes or noblemen or whatever you want to call them, and they have their machpin on one another, they don't allow free passage from one part of the city to the other because they belong to different hegemonim, then also Reb Shimon Gamliel was saying, that's going to be enough to require you to say b'fana nechtem, b'fana nechtem. And the Gemara will give an example of that. Closer to our times, an example of that might be, let's say, for example, back in the time when the Berlin Wall was standing, East Berlin versus West Berlin would probably be a good example of two different hegemonias within the same city like that, because they didn't allow free, access from one part of the city to the other. Okay. Mishnah continues. Let's talk a little bit about the borders of Eretz Yisrael for this purpose. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Merekem LeMizrach, any place from Rekem and eastward is considered Medina Sayyam. Rekem Kamizrach, Rekem itself is considered like the east, meaning it's considered part of Medina Sayyam, and therefore you'd have to say Befana Nechta, Befana Nechtam. So, in other words, when Rabbi Gamliel said Afa Mevim in a Rekem and a Cheger, then Rabbi Yehuda is basically following that and saying that yes, Rekem itself and any place further east than that is considered Medina Sayyam for this purpose. Me Ashkelon Madarim, continues Rabbi Yehuda, from Ashkelon southward is considered part of Medina Sayyam. But Ashkelon Kadarim, and Ashkelon itself is considered like the south. Again, in other words, if you bring a get from Ashkelon to the main part of Eretz Yisrael, you would also need to be saying b'fana nechtem, b'fana nechtem. So here's where Tosfos discusses at some length that Ashkelon now is part of Eretz Yisrael. We find, actually, in Sefer Yoshua, when it describes the borders of the Shvatim, it tells about how, fine, Ashkelon was one of the Plishti cities. They weren't able to conquer it in Yoshua's time, but later on, the beginning of Sefer Shoftim describes how, later in the times of the Shoftim, they were able to conquer it. So what are we talking about over here that it should be considered part of Medina Sayyam? So here's where Tosfos mentions the whole matter of Ole Bavel versus Ole Eretz versus Ole Mitzrayim, that yes, in the times of Ole Mitzrayim they were able to conquer it, and eventually Shevet Yehuda was able to conquer it, even though they weren't able to in Yoshua's times, and therefore it became part of the border of Eretz Yisrael from Ole Mitzrayim. But later on, in the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, when they resettled Eretz Yisrael in the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, they weren't able to conquer Ashkelon at that point, and it was left as a Goyish enclave. From various history books of that time, it comes out that even during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, as time went on, in the times of the Hashmonaim, in the times of Hurdus, they were able to conquer substantial parts of Eretz Yisrael. But even then, there were areas that they weren't able to that remained Goyish enclaves within Eretz Yisrael, and Ashkelon is actually one of them. So it comes out, in other words, that even though Lahalocha, for certain purposes, Ashkelon would be considered part of Eretz Yisrael, but here it was a majority Goyish area, and even if there were Jews living there, you're still going to have the issues that it described, that the Gemara is going to bring up, Rava's reason, of why you should have to say b'fana nechtem, and therefore the result is that you're going to have to, even if you're bringing it from Ashkelon. And he continues, my Akoi Latzafon, from Akoi northward, and here you have the same kind of thing. Tosfos mentions Akko is partially in Eretz Yisrael and partially not, so you have the same kind of thing. In other words, it's a border city, and again, you have the part that's Eretz Yisrael, the part that's in Chutz La'aretz, then you'd have to say b'fana nechtem, and maybe even the part that's considered in Eretz Yisrael, again, it's far enough away from the mainstream parts of Eretz Yisrael that maybe you would have to say it because, again, for the reasons that we're going to see in the Gemara. Anyway, and he says v'akka katzafan, and Akka itself is considered like the areas northward. So Rashi explains that Rabbi Yehuda is giving border cities only in three directions. What about the fourth direction? What about the west? The answer is towards the west. You have the Mediterranean. You don't need to give a border over there. Anything from once you get off the coast, once you have the Mediterranean, then there's nothing else. Mishnah continues. Reb Meir Omer Akko Eretz Yisrael Legitin. Reb Meir says about Akko that no, it's you're telling me, Reb Yehuda, that it's considered like Chutz La'aretz, and you have to say b'fana nechtem. No, the whole Akko is considered like Eretz Yisrael as far as Gittin, and you don't have to be able to make this declaration. Continues the Mishnah, maybe get be Eretz Yisrael, if a person is bringing, if the Shliach is bringing a get within Eretz Yisrael, so not like we've been talking about until now, from one part of Eretz Yisrael to another, or not like we've been talking about until now, is one of the, is from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, or vice versa, or from one area in Chutz La'aretz to another. Now, if you bring it in Eretz Yisrael, and it's Tzarech Shliach b'fanei Nechtam b'fanei Nechtam, you don't have to make any such declaration, as we'll see in the Gemara. So we're going to see in the Gemara that the two reasons that we're going to give are why you need to say b'fanei Nechtam b'fanei Nechtam. One is because the Batei Dinim may not be familiar with the concept that a get has to be written l'shma, and the other reason would be because you may not be able to easily find Edim to be able to certify, to be able to validate that the signatures are valid and not forged. So now, within Eretz Yisrael itself, you don't have that issue. You don't have either of those issues. So therefore, you don't need to say b'fanei Nechtam b'fanei Nechtam. V'im yesh olav orim. Now, on the other hand, if there is an objection to it, if the husband claims that the get is forged, then fine, yiskayim b'chosmav, then it needs to be validated through its signers. Meaning, in other words, that we're going to have either the original Edim come to Beis Din and they say, yes, these are our signatures, or other people come and say, yes, we recognize that these are those signatures, etc. The point is that unlike in the case where you have to say b'fanei Nechtam, b'fanei Nechtam, you have to be able to say that. In other words, in effect, as the Gemara is going to explain, the Shliach himself is considered like an aid on the signature, on these signatures, and we'll see in the Gemara why one aid is enough for that purpose. In this case, where you don't need that, where it's all within Eretz Yisrael, then you don't need any of that. We assume the get is valid, unless, as Rashi points out, unless if nobody objects to the get, then we assume it's kosher. Therefore we're good. Therefore we don't need anything. If somebody objects to it, if the husband objects and argues that it is forged, then we'll need Adam to validate it. But until when that happens, we don't really need to worry about that. Okay. So the Gemara starts off, and that Tosfos discusses in some detail over here, that even though, now for example, when it comes to Dinim Mominus, we could do that. For example, if you have, let's say for example, Reuben brings out a shtar where he is claiming that Shimon owes him money, and let's say Shimon is currently not in town, and Reuben is demanding payment of it for whatever reason. So there are certain cases. There are cases where Beis Din will just tell Reuben, wait until Shimon shows up. But there will be cases where they'll say, okay, we have to deal with something on the spot. Fine, we're going to have to appoint an apotropos or something and have them go deal with Shimon's and have them go deal with Shimon's property and take some of it away. But we will also, Beis Din will try to claim on Shimon's behalf, if at all possible, that the signatures are forged and therefore require Adim to come. Over here, we're not doing that, Tosfos points out, because Mishum Iguna, because since otherwise a woman might be stuck and not able to remarry, then the Chachamim were makel on it. Whereas in other cases we would claim Mizuyah when we could. And Tosfos discusses in some detail about those details, when exactly we say that, when will Beis Din try to make a claim of Mizuyah versus when not. But here we won't. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. My timer. Why the reason for this takana that you have to, that the shliach has to be able to say b'fanei Nechtam when he's delivering a get from Chutz La'aretz or within Chutz La'aretz and so forth? Rabba Omar, Lefisha ein b'kiyin l'shma. So Rabba says the reason is because people in Chutz La'aretz are not necessarily, they're not such b'nei Torah, they don't have the big yeshivas over there like you have in Eretz Yisrael and Babel, so they don't know the din of l'shma. So now, when the shliach says b'fanei Nechtam, then we can also ask him. Now we can ask him more details. Well, if this get was written and signed in your presence, then are you familiar with? Did you actually see that when they were writing it, they were saying that they're writing it l'shma? And he'll be able to tell us yes or no. Which the Gemara will later on deal with. Then in that case, why don't we ask him flat out whether it was l'shma? Why are we asking b'fanei Nechtam and leaving it at that? Why don't we ask him, well, was it l'shma? We'll see about that later in the Gemara. But anyway, that's Rabba's reason, is that because they're not familiar with l'shma, and therefore we need to check on that. Tosfos brings up the question, well, in that case, then, why, I mean, there's a lot of dinim that go into writing a get, as we're going to see throughout the Masechta. The Rambam, in fact, summarizes at the beginning of Hilchos Gerushin, he says there are 10 details within a get, that all of them are required, midaraisa, and if not, the get is batal, as opposed to then you have various other details that, as we're going to learn in the Masechta, where there, it's not, they're only midrabanan, or some of them are only lahatchila, and so on and so forth, but there are 10 things, so why over here are we focusing only on Lashma? So Tosfos ends up answering because no, what it may mean, sure, people in Chutz La'aretz are familiar with the halachas of Gittin, but they may not figure that this drasha that we learn that when we say that v'chosav lot means l'shma, they may figure that's not really a drasha, it's only an asmachta or something. So therefore they may not do that. And then there's other answers. One of the Rishonim, the Ran, I think, says that the vote would be that the Ran gives an answer that we don't mean so much that the Sofrim or the Bate Dinim who are supervising the giving of a get are not going to know these halachas. Of course they're going to know. What might happen is, though, the husband might not be so familiar with the halacha of Lashma, so he's going to find a get that happens to have the same names as his and his wife's names, and he's going to go get Adim to sign it, and he's going to have it delivered to his wife, not realizing that it's possible. So that kind of thing you'd have much more commonly than any of the other problems that you might potentially have with a get, and therefore the Chachamim were concerned about that, and therefore we wanted to be able to say b'fana nechta. Okay, so that's Rava's reason. Rava Omer l'fishen Adim mitzuyim l'kaimai. Rava says the reason is because it won't be so easy to find Adim to certify it. You don't regularly have people traveling from between one point and another, between Medinas Hayam and Eretz Yisrael, or between one country and Medinas Hayam and another. Therefore, if a question comes up about, if the husband comes and objects and says, one second, I never sent this get in the first place, it's forged, and then we're going to need to bring in Adim to validate it, either the Adim themselves or other people who recognize these Adim signatures, you're not going to be able to easily find it. So what happens is, instead, we say that the shliach has to say b'fana nechtam. Once he does that, then we chachamim will be able to believe the shliach that it was done, that everything was done properly. And now, if the husband comes and says mezuyah, then we're not just going to take him on his word. Only if he actually brings evidence that it is mezuyah. So therefore, Rava says that's the point of making the shliach say b'fana nechtam is in order to forestall any potential problem where the husband might claim that the get was forged. So the Gemara says, "My benai, who? Well, what's the practical difference between these two reasons?" And the answer is, "Ikka benai das tru beitre." One difference would be, what if two shluchim brought it together? Now Tosfos points out that the fact is you could argue according to Rabba's reason of Ein Bekiyam Lashma, then maybe that would only be a problem if you bring it from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. Wouldn't necessarily be a problem if you bring it from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. Nevertheless, though, it's clear that at least according to the Chachamim in our Mishnah, maybe not the Tanakhama, but the Chachamim in the Mishnah, who said Vaham Molech Vaham Nevi, obviously they would say that even in that case you need to do that, because we would say that if you don't make him have to say b'fana nechtam in the one case, he might not do it in the other either, and then the whole takana would be batal. So therefore, even Rabba would agree that's a valid reason to make the takana in both directions, even though in principle, according to Rabba's reason, it would apply only when you're going from Chutz La'aretz. Anyway, so the Gemara is asking my benai, what's the difference between the two reasons? And the answer is dastiu beitrei. Suppose that two shluchim together brought the get. Now, two people together by themselves can be adim. So according to Rabba's reason, Rashi explains, you would need to say b'fana nechtam, because it doesn't matter, Adim or not. The point is that they're not b'ki and l'shma, and having two Adim as opposed to one doesn't help us with that. According to Rabba, you don't need to say b'fana nechtam. If the husband comes and says that it's forged, then they'll say, we're two Adim. We can certify that these are the signatures of the people whose names are on the get. We don't have to actually have them see that the get was signed, as long as they recognize the signatures. So therefore, so that would be one nafkamina. Inami, another nafkamina would be Medina la Medina be'Eretz Yisrael, when you're going from one area to another within Eretz Yisrael. So let's say, for example, Rashi says between Yehuda and Galil. By the way, as far as that idea of Dasyur Beit Shrei, where Rashi is saying that the good of it is that now they can serve as the Edim to say that these signatures are valid after all, Tosfos points out a problem with that. So what happens? Okay, so these guys bring the get. They say that we're bringing this get and it's valid. Now what happens? They brought the get. Now they go leave town. Now what happens if the husband comes and says it's forged? And by now these guys aren't available anymore. We can't keep them around until we see what the husband says or not. So Tosfos gives a different answer. The reason why when you have two shluchim, it would be different is because now, once they say that the husband sent them, he won't be believed against them to say that he didn't. So now, later on, Tosfos explains, we're going to learn later on Daf Hey, the reason is because if two shluchim come and say that Pliny divorced his wife in our presence, then that's it, we believe them. So therefore, now when these two come and say that he divorced her that he gave us the get, and it was written, and they don't even have to say, b'fanenechta, if they're saying it's a valid get, we have no reason to distrust them, so therefore it's not even a matter of that they're available to validate the signatures. It's more a matter of that to begin with, when they say that the divorce took place in front of them, then we have every reason to believe them. The only thing we should be concerned about is maybe that he dafka had Pasala Edim deliberately forge and sign in a get. But he's probably not going to do that. He's not going to go to the trouble of sending a forged get and then send it through two shluchim and so forth, all in order to mess her up. We're not worried that we're going to go that far. Anyway, so... So that's one nafkamina. Inami mimedina la medina be'eretz Yisrael. Another nafkamina would be if you're going between one country and another in Eretz Yisrael. For example, Rashi says, let's say between Yehuda and Galil. So now, if we assume that not many people travel between one region of Eretz Yisrael and another, and many times that could be the case, because for example, you have, let's say, there are the Kusim living in the middle of Eretz Yisrael between, so travel might not be so easy and so forth. Well then, according to Rabba's reason, it doesn't matter, because the people of Eretz Yisrael know the Bate Dinim, and the average person in Eretz Yisrael knows the Din of Lashma and all the other Dinim, so there's no reason to say b'fananechtam. According to Rava's reason, that you don't have Edim that are able easily to validate it, then b'pashtus you should need to say it. Inami ba'osim medinim medina sayam. And a third possibility, what would be within one country in medina sayam? So again, if it's a matter of that people are commonly traveling between one part and another, well, it's all within the same country. People will travel around commonly enough. But if it's a matter of that they don't know Lishma, like Rabba says, then that's going to be an issue anywhere in Chutz Laaretz, even if you're going within one country. So those are three nafkaminas between their reasons. So the Gemara asks, well, according to Rabba's reason, if we're saying that the problem is that they don't know about Lashma, then according to him, why is one shliach enough? You should need two shluchim to begin with. So you should need two shluchim in the first place. Right now, after we go through the whole sugya, the Gemara is going to eventually explain, it's not really a matter of that we can't trust them at all, it's more a matter of that we're concerned about laws. We're concerned not even that the husband may actually go so far as to declare that the get is forged, it may just be like laws, he's going to start bringing up questions about it. Eventually, the Gemara is going to point out that point. Right now, we don't know that yet. We think that it's literally that the husband could claim that the get is forged, and we'd have to give that some credibility. So in that case, how does one shliach against that help? Shouldn't we need two? Not that it was forged, rather. Rabba's reason would be that he'd say that they didn't know that it's Lashma or something. The answer is midi dehavi akol adias shematoda. The reason is because no different, this is part of the question. Why shouldn't we need two? Midi dehavi akol adias shematoda. Because it should be like any other Edus in the Torah. You always need two Edim. So why over here is one Shliach enough? And he says, b'fananechtem. And the answer is, Edechad Neman B'Isurin. The answer is, when it comes to matters of Isur V'Heter, you don't need two Edim. One Ed is enough. We see, for example, Rashi says, the Torah believes every Yid that he took Truma from his produce, or that he shechted an animal properly, that he took out Gidan Nosher or Chelev or whatever. So therefore, the same way as in all those cases, you can trust one person. The same way, you know, mice in b'chol yom, you go and eat in somebody's house. You can rely on his kashrus. So we see even though it's only one aid. So that's good enough. Tosfos points out, though, there is a little more detail in that. It's one thing with many of those things because the yodei l'saknam, he has the capability of fixing it up. In other words, when it comes to truma, let's say, never mind the fact that eidecha nemen b'yisurin, more to the point is we can trust him because it's not something out of his control. It's easy enough for him to take truma, and the same thing with a couple of the other things. So Tosfos discusses that a little bit and says that actually Eidecha Nemen B'Yisurin, really we learn from the concept of Nida. That even though how do you have a husband is able to rely on his wife's counting of the days and to rely on that she went to the mikveh and he can trust her. So from that we learn that Eidecha Nemen B'Yisurin, you don't need two Eidos for it. And that's the thing. Tosfos says there's a little bit of an interplay over here of different factors because on the one hand you don't have a chazaka of isur necessarily there's no chazaka of isur yet because she's tameh other times and tahor at other times. It's also biyada because once the time is over then she's able to tovel. So it's true. When there's a chazaka of Isser, and when it's not biyada, then you may not be able to believe one aid. But when it comes to nida, where you have both of those things, there's no chazaka of Isura, there's no chazaka of Isser because once the seven days are over, there's less of a chazaka that the Isser still exists, and it is biyada. So therefore, that's fine. So Tosfos says that's where we learn the concept of eidecha nemen b'yisurin. Anyway, so the point is the Gemara is saying the same thing over here. So therefore. For one aid, so one shliach, which in effect is one aid, is enough to say that this get was written properly. The Gemara says, what kind of an argument is that? You know when you would say eidecha nemen b'yisurin? If you have, for example, a piece of meat where there's a suffix of whether it's chelev, which is osur, or shuman, which is mutter, fine. Delo is chazak isura. As we just said, there's no chazaka of isur yet. You don't know whether this piece bechlal is osur. So therefore, you can say eidecha nemen b'yisurin. Aval hochadis chazak isura de eishes ish. But here you have a chazaka previously. This woman was known to be an eishes ish. And again, it's not biyodei. It's not biyodei of the shliach to be able to do something about it. So therefore, have a davar shav erva. So wouldn't it be a case of a matter involving erva? The ein davar shav erva pachas mishnayim. And you never, whenever you have a davar shav erva, you always need two edim to be able to be matter it. Rashi points out we have a gzera shava from the word ervas davar and mishnayim edim yakum davar. So therefore, you're going to need two edim. So over here, the same way, and Tosfos in fact points out, the get itself, of course, has to be signed by two Edim, but here the Gemara was arguing, so first we were saying that to say b'fana nechtem is only a gili milsa ba'alma, therefore it's one, but now the Gemara is saying, the fact is, you have a chazaka against that, so how is one aid enough to be able to override that chazaka? So the Gemara answers, roiv b'kiyanein. The answer is most people who are involved in writing Gittin, or Rashi even has the Girsa, Roiv Yisrael, most Jews are familiar with the Dinim of Gittin, and therefore there's less of a chashash. So there's less of a chashad that they may have done it improperly. And the Gemara continues, V'afilu lo da meir d'chayish l'miyota. Now, even according to the mayor who we find in many places in Shas, is choshish for the miyot. We learned about it in particularly at the end of Yevamos. We had something about it where there was a case over there involving a cotton able to do yibum. So the chachamim say yes, chalitza they can't do because they have to be an ish or an isha. But they say that a cotton or a ketana can do yibum. Rav Meir on the other hand is chayish lemiyota. He's concerned about the miyot and therefore there's always the possibility that the boy may turn out to be a saris or the girl an ailonis who are unable to have children and therefore it'll turn out that it wasn't a valid yibum, that it was an erva, because as we learned back in Yevamos, any time you don't have the mitzvah of yibum, then instead you have, if they have relations, they're doing the ister of Eshesach, of his brother's wife. So therefore, so the mayor is concerned about that. So we see the mayor is concerned about miut. So now you're going to say, well, the same thing over here, even if roiv Jews Jews are familiar with these dinim, miut of Jews are not, so don't you have that issue? Nevertheless, Sam Safri the Daini, Migmagmiri. Nevertheless, even Rav Meir is going to agree that the Sofrim who write things for the Dayanim, and usually, now in principle, anybody could write a get, as we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, but practically speaking, you usually have the Sofra Dayanim write them, because they're the ones who are familiar with all the details. So therefore, so Migmar Gemiri, they're certainly knowledgeable, and therefore, so they're going to know that it needs to be Lashma, V'Rabbanon Hu Da'atzruch, or we're going to say, so therefore, in other words, Tosfos points out, what we have really here is a miut dim miut. And even a minority even within the minority itself. Even a mayor is not going to worry about that. But Rabbanon Hu Da'atzruch, it's only the Chachamim who required you'd have to be saved b'fananechtem, because... So Rashi explains, because, let's say again, you have, like we said before, a person might find a get that happens to have the same names as his husband and as himself and his wife, and figure that he can use it and not realize that, even he may have, there may be somebody else, we're going to learn later on in the third parak, you may have a case where Reuven Goldberg, who's married to Rachel, goes and finds Reuven Silverberg, who's married to Rachel, who wrote a get and then changed his mind and decided not to, and Reuven Goldberg says, hey, you know what, my name is also Reuven, my wife's name is also Rachel, why don't I buy that get off you and I'll use it for my wife? And the fact is, it would be possible, because it's not written Lashma, even though it was written Lashem Gerushin, it's not written for this husband and this wife, so he may not know that. So that's the reason why the Chachamim made this Takana in the first place, because of that concern. Tosfos discusses actually that it may not be so simple. If you have two people in town who are known to have the same names, then actually you may have an issue with it. So Tosfos says no. What we mean over here, Atzruch Rabbanon, is that again that we said that the husband might complain. He might say, you know what, this get was not actually written Lashem Gerushin in the first place. It was written just as a practice get by the sofer, and therefore by him saying b'fananechtem, then he's saying that now. V'hocha, so over here, b'shumi guna kilabara. Because of igun, because of the potential that otherwise, if we always require that a get is going to have to be brought by two shluchim, and then that may sometimes a woman may end up being stuck then, because not always is the husband going to be able to find two shluchim. So therefore, so we can be mekel, and therefore we can allow one. Therefore we can allow one shliach. Okay, so the Gemara says, what do you mean? What do you mean? You mean mekel? Hi, kolahu. What do you mean? This is a kola. Chumrahu. This is a chumra. On the contrary, de'im matzruchas leitchrei. Because if you require that there are always going to be two edim, loy osi baal ma'arer apostle, then the husband is then it's impossible for the husband to be ma'arer, for him to protest and say that this get may be forged, or that it was written shalo l'shma, or that the sofer wrote it for practice, and so on and so forth. Chad, but if you have only one shliach, osi baal ma'arer apostle, isn't there the possibility that the husband can come and be ma'arer and claim that it is possible? What are you calling this? What are you calling this a kula? And Tosfos explains, okay, it really the husband might only bring out a las ba'alma, might not even be said, he's saying for sure I know that it's forged, just that it was written for practice or whatever. Nevertheless, we could still say that it's actually going to be puzzle. So what are you telling me? It's a kula that we can get away with doing one aid. On the contrary, that can lead to a chumra where now there's more possibility of the husband trying shenanigans like that. The answer is kiven da'om amam fnei kama noisnila, because we're going to learn later on that when the shliach brings this get in front of, when he says b'fananechtem, in front of how many does he give it to her and say it? Doesn't have to be in front of beis din. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chanina chadam fnei beis v'chadam fnei gimel. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chanina disagree. One says he only needs to give it to her in front of two edim, and the other says he has to be in front of three. Meikra meiduk dayik. So we can assume the shliach to begin with, when he receives it from the husband and he knows the husband is sending it for a purpose. He wants to divorce his wife, and it's likely that the husband is not going to come and be ma'arer. So then the shliach himself, Medek Dayek, is going to be very careful to find out what happened over here, because he doesn't want to end up making himself shown to be a liar, or to be untrustworthy or something, that he's going to be claiming that this husband, Reuven, sent him with a get. Now the very same husband, Reuven, is going to come and say, wait, this get was forged or something. The shliach, to begin with, doesn't want to have such a situation. So to begin with, we can assume that he's going to be careful to find out the situation, and therefore, so now we have reason that we can say say that so now we're not so worried that we need to, that we should need two edim, that we should have to forestall the husband doing that, and therefore require two and avoid that problem. Therefore, we can say that we can be makel in order to avoid igun, and say that we only need the that we only need one shliach. And once he says b'fanenechtem, most of the time that will be enough, because the husband is not going to come and protest, because to begin with the shliach will have made sure that the husband is actually giving it to him beratzon, and that it was and that everything is on the up and up, and that the husband is not going to come and be ma'arer afterwards. So far we've dealt with a couple of challenges to, Rabba's answer of, because they're not Baki Lishma, that why shouldn't we need two? And then we'll continue in the next year, Bez Hashem, we'll continue talking according to Rava. Also, why should you not need two edim? Why is one aid enough according to Rabba's reason? That'll be, according to Rava's reason, rather. That'll be the next one, Bez Hashem.